Chapter 22. Saul monitored the reactions of the various factions as Charles continued the story. They all seemed fine with the part about the younger brother leaving the orchard and returning home. But when Charles described the exuberant response of the father and the details of the celebration that followed, many shifted in their seats. Then, the words that set off the storm.
"None of that is the point of the story," Charles said. "The main course is what happened next. It was the response of the older brother. He didn't celebrate. In fact, he was angry. He asked the father, 'Why should he get a party? Why not me? I never did the things he did.'"
"Now listen carefully," Charles continued.
"The reason the ruler gave us this story was to show us the older brother's response was exactly the opposite of the father's."
Gabor tensed as he saw heart after heart recoil at Charles' concluding words.
"Each one of you has had an opportunity to discover something about your own heart when you saw Abigail today. Answer honestly, is your heart like the father's, or are you like the older brother?"
The mighty wind blew, and not gently. It began above, near the high ceiling. A clap of thunder rattled the building. More than a clap, the deafening boom roared and echoed, growing louder. The hall's foundation shifted, shaking the floor. People's mouths gaped, but their shrieks could not be heard over the roar of the mighty wind.
"Look,"
said Laith, pointing to cracks forming at the center of the ceiling. Then, silence and stillness. The quaking, the chaos, it all came to an instant stop. The front door opened, and blinding light filled the room. As the people's eyes adjusted, gasps echoed through the hall. In the doorway stood three figures, the ruler, the father, and, between them, Abigail. The father held Abigail's right hand, the ruler her left. Abigail's face couldn't be seen. It was turned to the ruler, whose ancient scars seemed strangely fresh. The father looked over his family, and with a beaming smile and a voice filled with the father's pride, said,
"Behold, my daughter."
Abigail turned to the people, and her face lighted with a smile that infused the entire hall with energy. Some stood in stunned amazement. A woman ran to Abigail and threw her arms around her. Many others in the room embraced one another. Karis leaned into Gabor.
"Such a smile has never been seen in this hall."
Gabor pointed. "Look at the father."
"Yes, I see it. Her smile is identical to his."
The warriors in the hall stumbled into one another, blinded by the light of Abigail's smile. Abigail sought out the woman who had rejected her earlier.
"I have to tell you what happened,"
Abigail said. As she relayed the story of her meeting with the father, the woman's cold face warmed. By the end, both their eyes were moist with tears.
"I have something I need to confess," the woman said. "Me too," said another woman who had joined them.
Soon a stream of confessions flowed from broken hearts throughout the hall. Abigail embraced those confessing, reminded them of promises, spoke of her gratitude to the father, and raved about the ruler's excellencies, her smile beaming brighter and brighter the more she spoke. One by one, traces of her smile emerged on faces throughout the hall, and with each glimmer of joy she sparked in others, her own smile brightened. Within an hour, smiles radiated from many, about a quarter of the crowd, Gabor guessed. Despite the frowns of the others, laughter broke out among the minority. Then, singing.
"Her joy was lost, her beauty marred, trapped by fruit, in bondage barred. But now the smile of glory glows, the father's face in hers he shows."
The father roared in laughter. Then he squeezed Abigail's hand.
"Where is all your self-loathing, daughter?"
She requited his squeeze, then dropped to one knee and bowed her head.
My thoughts of myself mean nothing to me. Your hand on me is everything.
Do you all understand?
Said the father.
The greater the evil, the more profound and incomprehensible the forgiveness. The darker the picture of failure the prince painted on Abigail's mind, the more exuberant her love for the one who carried that evil for her and now accepts her.
The ruler turned to Abigail.
You feared your smile would never be the same as before.
You're right.
The smile now radiating from your soul is to your old smile what a sunrise is to an ember. The rise from the blackness of the tunnels to the light of the cottage, from the agonies of regret to the purity of a cleansed conscience, from the despair of bondage to freedom to delight in the good. The deeper the darkness from which I draw a soul, the brighter my colors shine in her love. He turned to the crowd. The very life of my father will pour out upon all who love her smile.
Hodia hated Abigail's smile. Seated with some like-minded friends, she whispered,
Look at her. She's acting like nothing even happened. For her to be grinning like that after the shame she's brought on this entire hall?
Moved by an impulse she didn't understand, Hodia rose and made her way near a side door. Friends from her table also stationed themselves at other doors along the back. In a synchronized action, they flung all the doors open. Hundreds of warriors poured through each door. The guardians' swords flashed, and the hall erupted in the clash of good and evil. Leaving Gabor and the others to his generals, the prince focused on the people who despised Abigail's smile. He would not delegate the task of stoking fires of self-righteousness, pride, and anger. Saul fought his way through a cloud of warriors as Watson cut a path to Hodia, who was gathering a following. As Watson approached her, he stood toe to toe with the Prince of Darkness. Saul took a deep breath.
He has no idea.
Hodia, stop! Watson waved an arm toward the crowd. You are destroying this place. And the ruler has warned us. If anyone destroys this hall, the ruler will destroy her.
I'm destroying it? I'm not the one who went traipsing off to the orchard.
Watson sheathed his warning dagger and drew a larger one. Rebuke.
This is how we know who the children of the Father are and who the children of the Prince of Darkness are. Anyone who does not love her sister is a child of darkness.
You're calling me a child of darkness?
You are behaving like Cain, who belonged to the Evil One and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brother's were righteous. Anyone who hates her sister is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life.
The prince staggered and dropped to one knee. Hodia glared at Abigail across the room. Abigail wilted. The ruler cupped Abigail's face in his hands. Look at me. Remember the father's approval. You have his favor, and mine. Nothing else matters. She who kneels before me can stand before anyone. With the father and the ruler at Abigail's side, the warriors stayed clear of her, but they closed around Watson like a cloud of locusts. Dozens more warriors worked on the hall's pillars. The prince shouted,
Cripple the most respected in the hall, and you will bring the whole structure down.
The gossip, complaining, fault-finding, and judgmentalism that had been growing now burst into the open as the factions each identified the people they believed to be a threat to the hall. Then it happened. The pillars down the center of the hall gave way, splitting the hall open from north to south. The great wooden beams across the ceiling broke loose and fell, sending all the humans scurrying to the east and west sides of the hall. The ruler, who stood with the father on the west side, called out,
Come to me, all of you, and you will be safe.
All who loved the ruler came to him, but the factions and those who had not forgiven Abigail could not see the father or the ruler. They had so convinced themselves that the father couldn't possibly be with Abigail, they ran to the east side, expecting to find him there. The moment the pillars gave way, time froze for Watson. There was time to dash to safety on the west side, but the group he had just confronted were turning toward the east. His sister's screams reached his ears.
Watson, run!
He looked at her and mouthed words he knew she would understand. Then he grabbed the sleeves of two men, pleading with them.
Come with me.
Just as they shook him off, the massive timbers came down in a deafening crash. Watson saw the beam a split second before it hit him, not enough time to even throw up his arms, much less dive out of the way. In the blinding pain, he knew immediately his back was broken. Unable to move, he could only watch the second beam plummeting down upon him. But this one he didn't feel. Was it adrenaline? Shock? In a surge of strength, he rose to his feet. Throughout the hall, he saw people he didn't recognize. Some were angry and looked dangerous, others friendly. All were armed and were engaged in combat. Several of the friendly ones surrounded Watson, protecting him. They escorted him to the ruler, who now shone with colors far more intense than any Watson had ever experienced. The moment Watson saw him, he felt himself change. The spectacular colors now emanated from his own body. All pockets of confusion in his mind left him. Mysteries became clear. Joy coursed through his veins. Anxiety, fear, worry, boredom, none of them even seemed possible now. He could hardly remember what they felt like. The ruler held a huge cup with blue liquid running down the sides and offered it to Watson.
For me to drink?
The ruler smiled. Watson studied the cup. The idea of ingesting the fluid seemed irreverent. He raised the cup to his mouth, keeping his eyes on the ruler. The ruler nodded permission, and Watson tipped the fluid against his mouth, parted his lips, and sipped. Power permeated his chest, then his stomach. Aches throughout his body, aches he never knew he had, made themselves known as they dissolved into pleasure. Life swelled within him and rose from his pores as if it were too much for his body to contain. Strength, energy, motivation, the ability to enjoy his surroundings, each component of life grew by the moment. Watson lifted the cup to his mouth again, slowly, giving the ruler another questioning look. The ruler reached and took the cup from his hand. He glanced inside the cup, then, with a flip of his wrist, flung the remaining fluid to the ground. "Follow me," he said, and led him out of the hall and down a trail Watson had never seen before. The trees lining the path flourished with a much brighter, deeper green than normal, and every sight resolved in such sharp focus that Watson took pleasure in merely viewing all that stood before him. A pebble, a pine needle, and, especially, the cottage directly ahead. He put a hand to his eye. No patch. Both eyes bright and clear. The path opened into an expansive valley. A river filled the bottom, a river so wide he could hardly see the other side. But instead of water, it raged with a torrent of the blue liquid. The ruler handed Watson the empty cup.
I call it my river of delights.
Watson ran to the shoreline with speed that startled him. He dipped the cup and drank it dry, then another. Joy boiled into laughter, tears, and singing. When the dust cleared, a pile of rubble divided the two sides of the banquet hall. As the people slowly awakened from their shock, they took in the devastation, still paralyzed in disbelief. Those nearest the father escaped serious injury. Charles had been momentarily deafened by the crash, but as soon as his hearing recovered, cries and moans surrounded him.
Leith! Levi! Help me!
The two men hurried to help Charles free a woman trapped under a beam.
Lift!
Leith and Levi managed to hold it just long enough for Charles and another server to pull the woman free. The portion of the roof that had fallen blocked access to the other side. Judging from the small number on the west side, most of the people had either been crushed in the center or had chosen to run away from Abigail instead of toward her.
"Where's Abigail?" Charles asked.
"She went with Kalen and Adam to check on the others," Levi said. "They went out the west door so they could circle around the outside."
Charles' eyebrows jumped. "Abigail went to the east side?"
"She'll be okay. Adam was with them. They just wanted to check on everyone over there."
"How about Watson?"
"Haven't seen him," Levi said.
Charles looked at Leith, who shook his head.
"He said something to Kalen just before the collapse," said Levi, "but I couldn't make it out."
Two servers approached with a report.
"Six with serious injuries on this side. They're being treated, and we think they'll all make it. Two are critical, though. We'll have to watch them closely."
"I'll come check on them as soon as I can," said Charles. "In the meantime, make sure you..."
"Here they come."
Leith nodded toward the doors.
"This doesn't look good."
Kalen, Abigail, and Adam approached, shoulders slumped, tears cutting channels through their dust-caked faces. Adam composed himself enough to speak.
"It's a mess over there. Hundreds of injuries. We tried to help, but when they saw Abigail, none of them would have anything to do with us. They blamed her for the collapse."
"Any fatalities?" Charles asked.
Abigail's tears turned to audible sobs, and for a moment, Adam couldn't speak. He cleared his throat and, voice shaking, said,
"Watson."
More tears. He cleared his throat again to give himself a moment. Then he whispered,
"He's gone."
Leith covered his face with both hands and turned away, taking two or three aimless steps. Kalen and Abigail embraced with renewed sobs. Charles sat in a daze. The sounds faded, and the chaos around him blurred into slow motion.
"I should tend to the injured. I can grieve later."
But he couldn't move. Levi faced Kalen.
"What did he say?"
She raised her eyebrows.
"Just before the collapse, Watson said something to you. I couldn't hear. Do you know what he said?"
She lowered her head.
"They aren't..."
More sobs choked off her words. She took a breath and tried again.
"He said they aren't ready."
Kalen turned to Leith, who closed his eyes and gave a slow nod. The friends waited for an explanation, but none came. Finally, Levi asked,
"What does that mean?"
"When we were in the gorge, after Kalen fell out, Watson started to panic," Leith said. "But then he remembered the promise room. I watched his terror melt into calm. And then he said, 'I'm ready.'"
"They told me about it after we were reunited," Kalen said. "And Watson explained what he meant. He said he was speaking to the ruler when he said that. He was ready to die and face Judgment Day. He knew his faith was real and all his evils forgiven."
Levi frowned.
"So today when he said they aren't ready?"
"He was talking about the people he had confronted about Abigail. He was ready to die, but those people were not. He could see that they weren't coming to the Father, and he gave his life trying to bring them."
"Why would he do that?"
Levi asked.
"What's the point of throwing away a good life to save a bad one?"
"Don't you remember the blood room?" Charles said. "Giving a good life to save bad ones is exactly what the ruler did for us, and it's what he taught us to do for one another."
"What a way to go,"
Leith said with a grin.
"Just like the ruler," Charles added.
Levi squirmed. His quizzical expression contracted into a pained one.
"What's wrong?" Charles asked. "Do you disagree?"
"It's not that," It's just...
He threw up his arms.
2 minutes ago, you were all weeping. Now you're smiling. Does Watson's death mean so little to you? How can you take it so lightly?
Charles' smile broadened. I assure you, the tears were real, and there will be many more to follow as we feel the sting of our loss. But we don't grieve like the Lowlanders. When they lose a loved one, he's lost forever. For us, it's temporary, like sleep. The ruler has said, whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will save it. Charles went on. One of my favorite places in the Promise Room is the death bed. Above it are the ruler's words, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. We will see Watson again.